John chapter 8, starting at verse 2. Just get a sip of water here. Now, early in the morning, he came again into the temple, and all the people came to him, and he sat down and taught them. Then the scribes and Pharisees brought to him a woman caught in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman was caught in adultery, in the very act. Now, Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. But what do you say?" This they said, testing him, that they might have something of which to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down and wrote on the ground with his finger, as though he did not hear. So when they continued asking him, maybe they thought they'd got him now. When they continued asking him, he raised himself up and said to them, "He who was without sin among you, let him throw a stone first." And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. Then those who heard it, being convicted by their conscience, went out one by one, beginning with the oldest, even to the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had raised himself up and saw no one but the woman, he said to her, "Woman, where are those accusers of yours? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said to her, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." That is such a beautiful, beautiful passage. It's a sad fact, when we're talking about confrontation, it's a sad fact that the people who often lash out the most vehemently against sin are not necessarily motivated by a passion for righteousness or a love for the sinner. Now, don't get me wrong, sin is horribly destructive. I don't want to make you guys all warm and fuzzy and just say, sin is just, we shouldn't be judgmental. And sin is horribly destructive. Sin destroys families. It destroys lives, both old and young. And it doesn't care how old or how young or how helpless they are. It is merciless in its destructive power. And I don't mean, when I say these things, I don't mean to minimize that fact. That is something we need to know. But what I'm saying is that not everybody who cries out against sin does so out of a love for sinners and out of a passion for righteousness. And these scribes particularly, and these Pharisees, had a completely ulterior motive for dragging this woman out in front of Jesus. They didn't care about righteousness. They did not really care at all about this woman. They were perfectly happy to risk killing her to get what they wanted. And what was it that they wanted? The Bible tells us plainly. They wanted something to accuse Jesus with. And they were willing to take her life to get it. Their plan, basically, they figured they were brilliant, and you know what Scripture says, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Their plan was that, well, if Jesus says, "You're right, the law calls for her to be put to death, go ahead and stone her." If he agreed with that, then he would not be the man of compassion that everybody was admiring him as though he were. He would not be the friend of sinners. He would not be the one who had come to seek and to save that which was lost. He would show himself to be merciless. Plus, not only that, but if he advocated her execution, maybe they could even go to Rome and say, hey, this guy is telling us to take her life. It was against the law, under Roman law, to execute someone unless you had their permission first. You had to get Roman authorization for that. Oh, this guy, look at this guy. He's a lynch mob in action. We'll just let the Romans take care of him. So that was one plan. On the other hand, if he were to say, well, spare her, no. Don't, you know, save her life. Don't stone her. What are you doing? You guys are so cruel. Then they could accuse him of being against Moses. They say clearly, the law of Moses calls for her execution. What are you against Moses? Are you trying to lead the people astray? Are you trying to lead them into immorality and licentiousness like the old false prophets did where God had to chasten the nation? Are you some kind of false teacher trying to lead God's people astray? What do you mean? Don't just disregard the law of Moses. Let her go ahead and continue in her adultery. They figured they had him. No matter what he did, they could use that against him. You know, what's interesting, I don't know that this is true, but it almost smacks of a setup. I'm just maybe a skeptical kind of guy. I look at that and I'm like, you know, something stinks here really bad. And it's not just because it's hot in Palestine. Something stinks. You know, there's something glaringly missing in this picture. And that is, if this is the adulteress, where's the adulterer? Here's the woman. Where's the man? It takes two to tango. Here she is. And it's interesting. This is what the law of Moses said that just makes it even more glaring. In fact, a couple places, Leviticus 20, verse 10 says this. The man who commits adultery with another man's wife, he who commits adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. How many is that?
Two.
Thank you. Deuteronomy 22. If a man is found lying with a woman married to a husband, then both of them shall die. The man that lay with the woman and the woman. So shall you put away the evil from Israel. Now, where's the guy? What happened to him? I mean, you know, how did they catch her in the act? If to do that, they had to be both people there. He's missing it. And it makes me wonder, I can't say this, you know, dogmatically, but it makes me wonder, did they set it up? Did they hire this guy? Because according to the law, the witnesses to the act were to be the ones who first threw the first stones. And then the rest of Israel would come after that and then throw stones and execute her as well. But the witnesses who caught them would be the first ones to throw the stones. Now, was this a setup? Did maybe the Pharisees hire some guy and say, hey, such a deal we have for you. We need you to help us take this guy down. And guess what? All you have to do in the process is this. You know, I don't know. I can't say that dogmatically, but it stinks. And even if it wasn't, their motives were not pure. They were not moved by a passion for righteousness. They were not moved by a love for sinners, or this was not a process of trying to restore her. Well, you know, we caught her in adultery, but she's really a great gal. You know, we just want to kind of help her out and, you know, throw a couple stones at her until she gets the idea. You know, maybe after a couple of bricks upside the head, you know, she'll have a change of heart. This was not a redemptive act here. This was a manipulative, calculated, brutal, cold action. But before we throw stones at the Pharisees, the first thing we need to do in those situations is to examine our own motivation for getting involved in someone's sin. And it's, I mean confrontationally. I mean jumping in bed with them. I mean confrontationally. Before we do, number one, let us check our motives, because the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked.